We rise out of the coastal mists of the capital, Lima, just after dawn, pointing southeast toward the sun in the hills of Cusco, heart of the ancient Incan Empire. I put on my headphones and dream. The Incas knew the seasons, the weeks, and the days by the stars. They knew exactly where their sacred sun would fall each evening along the jagged horizon. Their buildings were made with stones that fit together so perfectly they didn't need mortar. An earthquake couldn't budge them. Stones so large, no one to this day knows how they got them. High in the Andes, the Incas built thousands of miles of trails. Young men of the empire ran up and down the mountains in a relay, blowing shell horns to announce their arrival, carrying messages conveyed by knotted ropes. It was said they could bring fresh fish from the coast to the emperor in Cusco in 2 days, less time than it takes by bus or car today. I arrive here in an hour by jet. I sit by the fountain in Cusco's Plaza de Armas, busy, disoriented from the sudden arrival of 11,000 feet, sipping the antidote, coca leaf tea. Gazing sleepily at the great Spanish cathedral, I think about Francisco Pizarro and his band of violent explorers. In 1532, this force of 160 men, with their swords and armor and horses, conquered Chief Atahualpa and his Incan army of 40,000. Pizarro promised to spare the Inca in exchange for a room filled with gold. The Spaniards smashed the ransom delicate golden figurines to pieces so they could squeeze more gold into the room. Then they killed Atahualpa. Thereafter, all the subjects of the Incan Empire belonged to the Spanish crown and to a new god. The conquest by the Spaniards and the civilization of the Indians by the Catholic Church would go hand in hand.
No, gracias.
A boy in the plaza sells slices of his mother's orange cake. The many sidewalk vendors with their sweaters and pottery and stuffed toy llamas has come down from the hills above Cusco before dawn.
Soy de Estados Unidos.
¿Sí?
¿Cómo te llamas?
Wilfred.
Yo soy Sandy.
Sandy?
Sandy, I'm Sandy. Mucho gusto, nice to meet you.
Pizarro surrounds us, cathedrals and fountains built by Spain, but so does Atahualpa, Incan stone walls and buildings of the ancient capital. Imperial Cusco was built, some say, in the shape of the sacred puma. I've come intent on feeling this history, walking through it, hiking the Inca trail to the lost city of Machu Picchu.
¿Hay compañías turísticas aquí?
¿Compañías turísticas?
Sí. Aquí enfrente.
The boy tells me, here you can talk to lots of people, tour companies. They'll take you anywhere.
Muy buenos días.
Okay, you can sit down.
But as I talk with the tourist agencies that crowd along the plaza, I learn about another trail far from Machu Picchu, one it said that was walked for centuries before the Spaniards came, one that's still used today, a trail not of something lost, but of something living, the annual festival of Coyariti, an Andean religious pilgrimage at 16,000 feet, its roots in the Incan Empire. I hear warnings. The road is rough, the hike steep and exhausting, nights in a tent below freezing, the experience raw and overwhelming, but also, I'm promised, astonishing, if you go with respect. We ride out of Cusco at 10 o'clock on a deceptively warm evening, the plaza calm under a plump yellow moon. This microbus is supposed to fit 20, but we pilgrims are twice that many, cramming in for an overnight ride they say will take 7 hours.
There isn't room for a squeeze an English muffin in here.
The German mountaineer to my right is already weary. He says he's waited for hours for the journey to begin.
When I ask, I would like a correct answer, and that's not just something.
turned to speak to the Peruvian jammed in the aisle to my left.
Este es de Cusco. Sí. Ha ido en el pasado a Coyriti.
Sí.
En mucho tiempo.
My knees bang against the seat in front of me. My arms are wedged between my compatriots. As the bus careens down potholed dirt roads, our rear ends hammer the seats like pistons. This doesn't stop my German friend from falling asleep on my right shoulder, or the Peruvian on my left shoulder, as I become an international sleep rest. It seems this could go on all night. I look out at the road before us, framed in a pool of light. From this seat, at this moment, our destination seems impossibly distant. Still, I think that this trip is not supposed to be easy, that the travel agency's cost, $45 for two nights of camping, food, tour guide, isn't the real price, that somehow the difficulty of the journey must be related to what lies at the end, at 16,000 feet. At midnight, we break a fan belt, too much weight for the straining engine. We stretch our legs in the cool night air for 3 hours while they search for a replacement. I wonder now if we'll reach the mountain and Coyriti. Back on the road, we ride through the night, rattling down into valleys, climbing back up the cordillera of the Andes. As the bus snakes its way through the dark, churning up black dust, carrying its load of tourists from Italy and Germany and the United States and Peru, another pilgrimage is well underway. Naciones, or groups of pilgrims, making their own way to Coyriti. Thousands of Andeans from hundreds of villages are crossing the mountains on foot or by horseback, or jammed into flatbed trucks or microbuses like ours, heading toward the shrines in the mountains. Dawn greets us with a flat tire. We're at 14,000 feet. The air is thin here above the tree line, the land pale yellow, rocky, dusted with frost. Far below, a house, a stone fence, a few llamas, a potato patch. Nothing else grows at this altitude. Very spare here, like the cold, clear light that makes the distant ridge so sharp. There, just below the snow, lies our destination, and the steep trail up the mountainside. We can almost see it.